Welcome to the Market Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Stalter. In this show, we'll cut through the noise and give you real market insights from professional investors, traders, asset managers, and analysts. Our guests will put the market developments in context and give you actionable information to make you a more successful trader or investor. Let's get started. Hello, hello. Well, here we are, January 2022. Now, as I'm recording this, the major U.S. indexes are bouncing back from a sell-off, and things have definitely been choppy lately. And there's a theory called the January effect that says this is a good month to start investing. January returns of the S&P 500 from 1950 through 2021 shows that the index was up in 43 of those years and down in 29 of those years. So the odds are in your favor. And yes, for the market scholars out there, it is true that the S&P 500 was not officially launched until 1957, but there was a composite index of domestic stocks before then, so we can use that as a proxy. So historically, January is a good month. But with the market being in rally mode essentially since 2009, and yes, there have been some declines interspersed in there, should we be making some defensive moves right now to protect capital while still seeking growth? Now, today's guest has been an asset manager, financial analyst, and financial publisher, and he will give us some insight into protecting your portfolio as the bull market potentially winds down, as well as tactics for generating return in the short run, depending on market conditions. Here's my interview with Rob Isbitz, and get ready to take some notes because he's got some very practical ideas for you. Very happy to welcome my friend Rob Isbitz to the show today as our very first guest. Rob is the co-founder and chief investment strategist of Sun Garden Investment Publishing and the ETF Yourself newsletter. And Rob, I love that edgy title. Today, you know, we want to just talk a little bit about what you are looking at as we're heading into 2022.
Well, thank you, Kate. Great to be with you in the new year. And I would wish you and your colleagues at Market Beat luck with this new exciting podcast, except you won't need luck because there's so much skill and talent over there. And I really am flattered to be the first guest. So thank you for having me on. So I'm not one of those investors that likes to divide everything neatly into years, but calendar years. But let's face it, everybody else does. So when you look back at 21 and turn the page to 2022, there are a few things at the top of my mind. One is not so much a bubble in the stock market, although I do think that we're pretty far along with that. But the bubble to me when it comes to equities is in the S&P 500, how it's constructed, how top heavy it is, and where it's going to go from there. And I think that's one big story for this year. And that is why I tend to focus on dividing the world up into many, many, many different pieces and not being too S&P focused. I would say the second bubble that I'm concerned about, and frankly, I think that to many investors, especially those that are retired or approaching retirement or even thinking about retirement, no matter what age they are, that is the corporate bond situation. The Fed has backstopped corporate bonds. If you look at the corporate bond indexes, half or slightly more than half of them are in triple B rated bonds, which means they're kind of barely hanging on. And a lot of them probably should be junk. And I think that's a bubble that is more likely to pop this year than maybe any other one. And I would say it's probably the thing that investors are most unaware of until it all of a sudden happens. And then I think I would say the other couple of things, and I would say I've mentioned these just briefly. Inflation is certainly a threat, but I think it's the threat more than the actual inflation. It's the threat that will freak people out. It's the threat that will move prices. And I've been a technician since my dad taught me when I was 16 years old. That was only 41 years ago. So, you know, when I look at the charts, I see, okay, it's more about how people react to inflation than whether or not the actual numbers are posted. It's the fear. And then I think the last thing, kind of in headline form, I would call it a retail investor bubble. And I don't mean for a second that retail investors aren't bright, because they are. And they're brighter, I think, as a group than they ever have been. I think where the bubble in retail investor behavior is vulnerable is that a lot of folks know how to play offense, but don't necessarily know how to play defense. And that's, frankly, not really their fault. They don't know what they don't know. They're very coachable, but there's nobody coaching them because, as I'm sure you know, everything is about sort of tips and tricks and Instagram and TikTok, and everybody's giving advice. It's kind of hard to sort out. You know, it kind of reminds me of the there's a famous scene in my favorite movie, Bull Durham, where they all meet at the pitcher's mound and the coach wants to talk about baseball. But instead, all the guys talk about, well, this one has a curse on his glove, and this one, we don't know what to get him for his wedding coming up and all this stuff. And so one of the guys just says, you know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff here. And to me, that kind of summarizes where the retail investor is. And I just don't think that they are getting enough constructive, disciplined, experienced guidance, which frankly is why I was thrilled to be the first guest on the Market Beat podcast, because I really like what you folks are doing in that direction.
Oh, that's great. And I do remember that scene, by the way. In fact, I was just talking to somebody about that not long ago. That's very funny you bring that up.
Yeah, candlesticks make a nice gift, right? That's the famous line from there. Maybe find out where she's registered, get her a place setting. Anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So let me dig into the S&P. Let's take each of those points that you just made and kind of briefly address each one of those a little bit more. You know, there has been a lot of discussion about the S&P and the major indexes being top heavy. And of course, you know, the S&P being market cap weighted. We do see companies like Apple, Microsoft, the other usual suspects in the big Silicon Valley companies that really have been the leaders in the index. So given that, has the approach that investors should take, has that changed?
Well, I don't know if it has changed. I think it needs to. I would think of it this way. There's a lot of talk in different circles about climate change. Okay. I think where undeniably the climate is changing is in the investment markets, the investment climate. And when it comes to the S&P, okay, let's keep this in mind. Just this century, we've seen a 10-year annualized return close to 20% in the S&P, and we've seen a 10-year annualized return of more than 3% loss per year. So you can turn 100 grand into several hundred thousand, or you could have turned it into 70. And I think you have to look at it and say, okay, even if I'm a day trader or a swing trader, I have to have some outlook beyond that. I'm not just investing to feed myself tomorrow. And you have to understand the arena and the environment you're in. And let's face it, we are at the top end of that historical range. Now, again, I think that's an S&P problem, okay? And I think the way that people react to it is less indexing for the long term, quote unquote, okay? Less of the 60-40 garbage. And it's much more about, I think, a couple of things. One is learning how to play defense. And the second is tactical management. And by tactical, I don't necessarily, I mean, look, people define it however they like, right? You know, I'm in the publishing business. So my job is to tell people what I think as opposed to what they should do personally. But I do get a sense that one of the ways the markets have changed in a very important manner, Kate, is that you can invest in days or weeks or months. I think the biggest problem for people at this stage of the market cycle in stocks and bonds is assuming that they can just plant seeds in something, a stock, an ETF, what have you, and expect that they can look up 3, 5, 10 years from now, like Rip Van Winkle, and expect that they've had appreciation. I think a lot of it is sort of the nuance in between. And that's why I think tactical management, it really understanding more about it, should be every investor's priority. And look, that means giving yourself a very wide, diverse set of investments that you can consider within the public markets. Okay, to me, it's ETFs. I follow 300 of them. And knowing that it's easier today, I believe, to make 5, 7, 10% in a matter of weeks or months than it is to make 50% over 3 years, like back in the good old days.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you're speaking, what occurs to me, you know, you and I both come from the investment advisory industry. We both have a history there. And I know that in the last 5 years, 10 years or so, the idea of asset allocation has really become very popular. And nobody uses the term buy and hold, but that's essentially what a lot of that does amount to if you take out the rebalancing. So it seems to me like you're suggesting that perhaps that's no longer the best approach.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And what I would say to that is, just like I said, you know, we were talking about climate change, but I'm talking about investment climate change. I'll go sort of in the same direction. I think the biggest issue, or maybe the biggest hurdle for a lot of investors now that they've been sort of indoctrinated into how this works, but only a fraction of it, because we haven't really had a whole lot of market trouble since 2009, other than a couple of blips. Here's the thing, sustainability. And I'm talking about sustainability of the ability for something you buy to go up and up and up and up. And that's why I say tactical investing, to me, you might end up owning security XYZ over the next 3 years, but I think you have a much better chance to maybe own it 4 or 5 or 6 different times over those 3 years. Maybe in total, you own it for 12 months, 14 months, 18 months, whatever, okay? But things tend to trend up and down so much more. And there's, I think, a very easy explanation for it as somebody who's studied markets pretty intensely going way, 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 way back. I think this is what happens toward the end of a bull market cycle. It just gets harder and harder to push it forward. It's kind of like an NFL team. It's a little easier to move the ball downfield, but now if you're at like the 3-yard line, well, there's not a whole lot of room left in the field, and so it takes a lot of your playbook away. I think that's kind of analogous to where a lot of investors are right now. And so a little more dinking and dunking, you know, i.e. tactical management, I think is the path to success, probably for the next several years at a minimum. And let's face it, bonds aren't helping you either, and that's a whole nother story.
And that's where I wanted to follow up here, because, you know, our audience, for the most part, we got a lot of folks who are interested in the stock market. And frankly, that's where just most investors are interested anyway, the bond market. It doesn't deliver the same kind of return. It's not as exciting. How should investors, swing traders, how should folks be looking at the bond market and incorporating that into some of their decisions?
They should be looking at the bond market as, especially, I'm going to speak in the ETF form here, okay? I'm assuming that most folks aren't buying bonds, clipping the coupons and letting them, you know, mature years from now, okay? The markets have changed a little bit. I mean, I know there's still people who do that, but, you know, look, so the first thing, and I'll take a shot at Wall Street here in general, okay? You know, if you have money in a bond fund, and it's not for tactical purposes, or you have money in a bond manager, a bond strategy, et cetera, and you're paying a fee for that, well, you're already 1 year into not returning even what you pay in fees. And the outlook is no better. It's not clearing up anytime soon, right? I mean, bonds were down last year. I think the 2-year, even the 2-year treasury, I think it lost money for the first time like ever last year. And that's in the treasury market, okay? It's worse in the credit market where, you know, the Fed has kind of backstopped a lot of parts of the bond market, particularly the corporate and the high yield. And at some point, the safety net is going to go away. I have no idea when. I just know when it does, it's going to be a blank show, so to speak. Because we saw exactly what happened. We had a dress rehearsal last year. Actually, it's 2022 now, Rob. So in 2020, 2 years ago, we had it. Okay. If you look at what happened to LQD, the corporate bond ETF, when the stock market fell off, it was just a slightly smaller version of a crash. And what that tells me is that was a warning sign. So when it comes to how you use bonds, kind of turning this in, okay, so what do we do to exploit it? That's what I always ask myself as an investor. Okay, you can't control what the issues in the climate is. You can control what your response is to it, what's your strategy, and what are your tactics. So when it comes to bonds, and let's say bond ETFs, okay? So whether it's TLT to buy the long bond or TBF to short the long treasury bond, you can do the same type of thing in the corporate world. There's a variety of bond ETFs, and I'm not telling anybody which ones to buy or sell, but I will say this, they are all tactical weapons that you can use. Okay? I will tell you that in the last couple of years, in portfolios that I run, we have made money on rates going down, bond prices going up, and we have made money the other way. And it's just a matter of, I mean, it's treat them like equities, but just a different form of equities. They're all daily liquid vehicles in ETF form. They're very easy to see through and understand what's in them, at least if you do the kind of research that we do. And avoid the opaque stuff. And you know, look, I mean, I counted it up the other day, Kate, and this kind of goes to your point of sort of bonds, but then, you know, I'll incorporate beyond bonds, okay, which is kind of a theme around our place, you know, beyond bonds. I believe that we track, I counted it up, it was 170 different market segments and mini segments, industries, sectors, themes, parts of countries, individual countries, all types of bonds, long, short, long with a disaster or tail risk hedge. There are so many options out there. And I'm not talking about options, that's a whole nother story, okay, you know, where there is opportunity. But just in the ETF world, there are so many tactical tools that you can use. And I'm not telling people not to take individual stock risk at this point. I'm just saying that it comes with a lot more baggage than it used to in the name of quarterly earnings blow-ups. And if you own some of the sexy stocks from last year or the year before, you've probably already seen that. So at the end of the day, they're all sort of different tactical weapons. And I think what investors should do this year is they should focus on expanding their breadth, their universe of available opportunities, kind of like, hey, I don't want to have one quarterback on my team. I need a couple on the roster and I need three or four others on the practice squad because I don't really know who's going to be my guy at any particular point in the future.
Flexibility. Well, it's also like who's going to go on the COVID list. I mean, that's you could sort of extend that out to that, right? Because in tactical allocation, like who's sick this week, and we need to get rid of that guy and bring somebody else in.
You just let me know when you want to do an entire podcast episode only speaking in football analogies, and I'm there. I've been writing sports analogies, especially football, for a long time.
As a trader or investor, you need timely information to help you make better decisions. And analyst upgrades and downgrades give you the outlook for the stocks you're watching, coming from the big institutions who are behind 70 to 80% of market movements. For absolutely no cost, MarketBeat will send analyst recommendations directly to your inbox daily. You'll get a concise summary of analyst upgrades, downgrades, and new coverage, along with relevant news and information for the stocks on your watch list, real-time portfolio monitoring tools, a rundown of the top headlines each day, market calendars, the MarketBeat mobile app, and other research tools. Don't miss out. Sign up right now. It's 100% free, and you can find all this at marketbeat.com/ratings/newsletter. That's marketbeat.com/ratings/newsletter, and you'll find that link in the show notes. Let me kind of ask you another question about the bond market. Is, you know, often in some of the things you read, a lot of these journalists, they will kind of tell you, well, bond yields are this, and this means that for equities. And I think for a lot of investors, that just kind of ends up being, frankly, a lot of gibberish that people are not really sure how they should pay attention to or how they should tactically allocate and use that information. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I did mention briefly before that my late father taught me to chart stocks 41 years ago by hand on graph paper. And I continue to believe, and I think a lot more people are thinking this now, just based on how a lot of the trading operations are set up and a lot of the retail trading focus. Technicals, especially if you can develop an edge and treat it with as much humility and maybe less arrogance, I think that is the key signal that you need. I think gone are the days where you look at an investment, whether it's a bond, and say, oh, I like that because it's a quality business and I can get this interest rate and you know, we're playing the spreads and all that stuff. I mean, I think a lot of that has been minimized in the same way that I think, it used to be you and I remember far enough back to when you bought a stock because you liked the business. Well, there's only so much you can pay for that business, right? Mm-hmm. And we are way past the point where most businesses are fairly valued. So what you have to do instead, and getting back to the bond market, I think, look, when it comes to yield, just forget about it. Okay. There is no yield. Okay. You know, the new yield, the new income investment is consistent, repeatable, small standard deviation, if you will, total return. Mm-hmm. And that's frankly, I mean, look, that's kind of always been my gig going back probably 20 years. And it had a lot to do with the type of clients that I had. They had already climbed the mountain of wealth and they were not looking to, pile on to what they had, or at least not in a way that would bring on a lot of risk. And so my number one investment rule has always been ABL, avoid the big loss. And so when it comes to today's bond market, rising interest rates are both a threat and an opportunity, Kate. So let's say rates skyrocket and somebody says, okay, well, rates are going to go through the roof, Rob. What do? You have to avoid bonds, right? No, short them through an inverse ETF. Same thing with the stock market. You know, I used to say to people, and matter of fact, I'll give you this question if you don't mind me throwing this back at you. Mm-hmm. Okay. When everything in the stock market is going down, what's the only thing that goes up?
Well, traditionally it's been bonds.
Traditionally it has been bonds. That game is likely over. Some people will say volatility goes up. Okay, yes. And that's mm-hmm. And you can be long volatility through ETFs and you can make money that way. But the other thing that goes up when any market goes down is a security that was created specifically with the mandate to deliver the opposite of what that market does. So when SPY is crashing, SH, which is basically the opposite of SPY, a little, you know, different rules because of the math that's involved, but, you know, no leverage, single short. And again, not a recommendation, but I'm saying, like, there is no impossible situation. And in fact, I think 2022 and probably 23, 24, very similar to the 3 years where the dot-com bubble crashed, 2001, 02, and early 03 until about March, there is a massive amount of opportunity, but it's going to come not from hoping the market goes up and then adding beta to it, as we say, you know, hey, wait a minute, I can double or triple leverage the NASDAQ, or I can buy, this fund that's run by a star manager that kind of came out of nowhere and just lever up, you know, that way. No, it's going to come from just the market's always telling us a story. The charts help us see what the story is. And if you break the market into enough pieces, there is always something going up. And if absolutely everything is going down, that only means that the inverses are going up. So there is never a time where you can't be trying to exploit what the market is giving us. And I think the sunny days were over a while ago. The market narrowed a lot last year. And I think this year has become a little bit more of a headline. And let's face it, at the end of the day, you know, emotions, charts tell the story, and fundamentals. I don't know what are fundamentals anymore. So I think I'm giving you a very optimistic forecast for investors, especially the retail investor. But they do have to solve the knowledge gap that I think is pervasive, because they've been getting tips and tricks, Instagram, TikTok, everybody and their brother. And that's, again, why I'm glad that that we're talking in support of a site that is an agent of change.
Right. And, you know, I pulled up the chart of the ProShares short S&P 500 while you were speaking, and it's pretty interesting. It's exactly as you're saying. In February of 2020 and March of 2020, this ETF had gains while the S&P was down. So folks, it does work exactly the way Rob is telling you. And this is a really good tip. I like this one. Hey, speaking of charts, Rob, and I know we've only got a couple more minutes here, but you did have a sector, an industry that you like based on the charts. And you want to tell us about that for a second?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a moving target,
right?
when you're a tactical manager, it's always a moving target. But, you know, look, I don't just, frankly, I mean, I'm not a trader, quote unquote. Okay. I'm really a realist when it comes to investing. And so of all the sectors and themes and industries and styles that I cover in my research with my team, there are things that will, let's say, I mean, we look at everything in terms of what is not so much how much can we make, but what's the risk of major loss that we are taking along the way? Because you can make money with anything at any time, but where every security is different from the next is how much major loss. So I've been looking for places where, you know what, I think there's less of a possibility that this thing's just going to completely fall out of bed with the rest of the market. And that has led me to a few sectors. I think all of them are tentative this late in a bull market, but I think the 5G story, because of, dare I say, the fundamental background, and I know they're going back and forth now with the airlines and everything, but you know, 5G is coming. It's going to be, I think, life-changing to some degree, and I think the companies that are involved in that business probably are going to get a little more of a pass from investors, meaning if the whole market falls, they will be among the most resilient. The ETF that I track that follows that is, well, 5G, FIVG. And let's face it, even by the time this airs, that recommendation is not a recommendation, but things change. Mm-hmm. But when I look out a little bit further, kind of weekly chart and beyond, I think some sustainability there. I'd say it's probably one of 20 different segments that I am looking at that kind of look similar. But obviously, we had time for one, and so that's one we looked at.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this chart. I pulled it up again while we were speaking mm-hmm. here. And it's technically holding up well above its 50-day line. That's something I look at with investments or trades. And I agree with you. It just seems that if you are kind of looking at the long-term forecast for this industry, it does seem pretty interesting.
Yeah, you look at it on a weekly and, I mean, as we're sitting here, it looks like the distance from the current price to the weekly trend line that I just drew as we were discussing this is, I mean, it's certainly less than 10%. And that's a better bargain than a lot of places you get. If you say, okay, well, it's in a trend channel, it's in a position where if something bad does happen, at least I'll be able to figure that out pretty quickly. And let's face it, all we can ask for as investors is that the trade-off between the reward potential and the potential for major loss, again, ABL, avoid big loss is my thing. If you can get a good trade-off in a market that is this old in terms of its bullishness and with sentiment maybe starting to turn at the beginning of the year here, I think you have to highlight it. I actually use one more sports analogy before we finish. One of the things we do is I created a system which I call the depth chart, which is exactly what we were talking about before. So what I would say is, you know, you don't have a lot of like screaming buys on a depth chart right now. It's kind of like saying, you know, we got five quarterbacks and they're all kind of stinky, but one is less stinky than the rest.
Right.
And so that's the starter. And by the way, there's probably like 10 NFL teams finishing the season that way,
yeah.
including my New York Giants, Giants and Dolphins fan. But anyway, so, you know, it's all relative, right? And so there needs to be at this point, you know, investors can't be too choosy or too perfect. There are things to invest in, but your time frame just has to naturally be shorter than maybe it was a few years ago.
Hey, Rob, you've given us some terrific advice today, ways to look at the market going into 22. Definitely have you back in a few months and we could sort of look at where maybe the second half of the year is going to go. Would love to continue this conversation. If the listeners are interested in learning more about what you do, how can they find you?
Sure. Well, it's sungardeninvestment.com. By the way, SunGarden, easy to remember because I live in the Sunshine State of Florida and I grew up in the Garden State of New Jersey. And that's how we got SunGarden.
I never knew how that came about. Never knew
SunGarden,
that.
Yeah. SunGardenInvestment.com or my email is just rob@sungardeninvestment.com.
Okay, that's great. Hey, thanks again so much. Really appreciate your insights today and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. This was terrific. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Market Beat podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You'll find the show on all your favorite podcast apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, anywhere else you get your podcast. And of course, you can always find us on marketbeat.com.